The next item is from the Director of Family Care, submitting an informational report regarding the potential impact of the 2012 capitation rate on Milwaukee County Department of Family Care. This went to Health and Human Needs, who took no action on this report.
Done, which we're very proud of, is with directly with an agency that provides grants to one of our day programs at a reduced rate. So, and that rate will continue to drop depending upon the volume of individuals that utilize that particular vendor. Excuse me. But as it stands right now, that's still a 23% decrease in the cost to ride with this vendor. We are going to continue to expand our network of transportation providers to private providers. That is probably the only area where we would expect to see some growth in terms of community vendors, because we would like to continue to have options available for people. We're particularly focused on making sure that individuals have the availability to get to places off hours, evenings, weekends. We are also looking at revising. This is something that's been in draft from the state for quite some time. I'm not sure when it will be finalized, but we have gone forward with revising our scope of services so that our residential providers also include transportation as part of their benefit package, if you will, as part of their responsibilities. So, between that and looking at where people attend as opposed to where they live, so that, again, fully respecting member choice, but also recognizing the real easy concept that no one wants to ride the van for an hour in the morning and an hour in the afternoon. That's not a fun thing for anyone. So that's not a useful portion of their day. They're trying to get to the really great part of their day, but being on the van isn't good. So we're also looking at making teams aware and members aware of all of the day options for individuals who live in the community, so we can try to make sure that their active portion of their day is extended and the transportation part of their day is as reasonable as possible. We've also looked at our day center model in terms of whether it's possible for some of our residential agencies to provide more meaningful activities within their facilities during the day. As I shared with Health and Human Needs yesterday, I was looking at case notes and talking to a care manager for an individual who's 84 years old and would like to retire. I don't think that's an unrealistic expectation for someone who's 84 years old. I hope not. So what does that mean? How do you meet people's outcomes for socialization and useful activities and still not say that, in the worst day in January, you still have to get up and go somewhere because perhaps the group home isn't staffed during the day. So we want to make that an option for individuals.
Supervisor Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In reading here, one thing I remember, I thought we were the only game in town, but we weren't anymore. But I think you really have a couple of very good reports here and outcomes, and I know you've worked hard on these things, and I think we're all much appreciative. Now we serve, where did I see the number here, 7,000. I guess my question would be, is that you have goals? Do you feel good about where you are, and how many more people can we accommodate? That'd be my question, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Supervisor Smith. With the caps on enrollment, I guess the easy question is, do I feel good about where we are? There is always room for us to accommodate additional members. Absolutely. We were fully prepared to be the only managed care organization we are now. We were fully prepared to continue to be one of two managed care organizations in a time where there were no waiting lists, and yet there are waiting lists now. So we and some of what some of the changes that we have to make when we talk about cost efficiencies, a lot of our agencies staffed up with the expectation that you've got some predictable rates of growth of increases in enrollment. With a cap, they don't have that anymore. So we could absolutely accommodate more members than we currently have. What we're trying to do is we're at a time of caps on the enrollment, individuals can only so many individuals can come in as have left. And if individuals leave my program, it doesn't necessarily mean that same number will come back in. They have those other options that are available to them within the county. So I may lose 10 and only 2 may re-enroll into this particular program. So, and we have started to see, and Mr. Hudson can give some more detail on that, a decline, even since, you know, the steps were implemented in July, in our enrollments. So we are very concerned about that. We have spent a great deal of time, again, marketing and making sure that people are aware and making sure that, you know, we're able to, again, come out on the other side of this biennial budget and still be here. But capping our enrollments, we have already seen a decrease in the number of individuals because of just that's the nature of that cap on the enrollment side. So we would hope that we would continue to be able to be a very good, very viable option for individuals, those individuals who manage to get through.
Thank you. Any other questions, Supervisor? Can you speak to the reserves that you have in the amount of $15,867,833?
Specific? More. Yes, Mr. Chair, Supervisor, I can speak much more eloquently on any number of topics than I.
Chairman, Supervisors,
Well, seeing any type of reserves from any department, $100 would cause me to ask, you know, what is it used for? How did you get it? And if we're giving you tax levy, or, well, not tax levy, but if we're, you know, as helping to support, I guess that's a question that I, as the chair of this committee, would want to know.
Chairman and County Board Supervisors, to answer the first part of the question, where did it come from? Well, that this is an accumulation of, since 2005, of surpluses that we have that will realize during the course of the 7 years. We did have 1 year where we had actual losses, and that was in 2008. And at that, during that time period as well, we were also in that county for $12.2 million. What exact number is $12,217,786 exact of the Portland County. So, so what are they used for? Well, first of all, there's a minimum requirement by the state, and that changes from year to year. Some of it's based on our capitation revenues. It's there's a formula for the two reserves. But there's three reserves in total. There's a working capital reserve, there's a restricted reserve, and an insolvency reserve. The real easy one, the insolvency reserve, is a flat $750,000, on which we've had to pledge that money to the Wisconsin Department of Administrative Services, and they are actually holding it in a secure vehicle concerning some small interests. But that's also used for as a pool for all NCOs. Then the restricted reserve is a requirement, it's a formula, and it's driven off of the capitation revenues, and it's various percentages depending on the size of your NCO, and that number for us is about almost $3.4 million. And then there's the that's the requirement, and then there's the working capital, which is 2% of our capitation revenues for our year projected capitation revenues. And that requirement was $7.8 million. We have an excess in that arena in working capital. Because the overall requirement is about $12.2 million. If the math is certainly correct, $12.2 million. And we've got 15.8. What is it used for? Well, it's used for fluctuations in operations, changes in case mix. For instance, we may start to see some patients who require that ventilator. Just last month, we received a case that's going to cost us about $28,000 a month. So it's for those types of situations. The first mechanism to access accessible to the capital reserve account. Once that's replenished, then we would have to seek approval from the Wisconsin Department of Health Services Office of Benefit Expansion to access our restricted reserve. Should we fall below our minimum, we go under a plan of correction.
Questions, supervisors?
You just should have stated.
Supervisor Mann?
You should have stated why we have a reserve. Because
we did fall and had a correction plan within approximately 2004, 2005. And that's the reason why we have to go into having these reserves. The state requires to have those reserves. He just told you about it, but he should have also informed that it was a mandate for us to get into the reserve business.
Which is the $12 million that you had to pay back to the county over a period of time.
Yes, Jim, that's correct. The county board made the decision to, at the time, fund the losses and then replenish the reserves, and then it was able to establish that as the operations became successful again, they would be able to pay the fund back.
Supervisor Roma West.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a little bit of history. That happened in 2004. And that money has been paid back in full for many years now. It seems like many years now. It seems like it happened many years ago. But at the same time that decision was made that we would put that money back in reserve, we actually were, as Milwaukee County, reaffirming our commitment to the family care program. Because at that point in time, the then county executive had decided that we wouldn't do family care anymore and had sent a letter to the state saying, here, take it back, we don't want it. And this county board, under the leadership of Supervisor myself and Supervisor Clark and Supervisor Cox, rallied the troops and were able to garner the support to come forward with the plan that Mr. Hodgson is speaking of. So it's quite some time ago, and they did pay us back rather quick, ahead of schedule, actually. So that in and of itself is a great feat. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So according to that plan, $750,000 is insolvency to the state, and they have it in some type of escrow account, receives a small interest rate. $3.4 million is restricted, and 7.8 is working capital. And then any excess above that is used for discretionary spending. For example, the example you used of purchasing the ventilators. I'm not sure if I'm saying the proper term, but.
Mr. Chairman, County Board Supervisors, just so we're clear, the reserves are not necessarily for discretionary spending, but should the department sustain a loss because of unexpected expenses. Those aren't dollars that we can tap into on an ad hoc basis when needed. Those are, there still has to be a process. We need to be a deficit demonstrated.
Yes.
Before you can tap into the reserves.
Okay.
So, Chairman, Congress Supervisor, we would have, in order to access the reserves, we would have to set for a loss, a deficit. The reason that's set up, and the way the state views this is like they're looking at this like an insurance model. The piece that I mentioned about the solvency reserves, that $750,000, each MCO had to provide a $750,000 payment. Should an MCO get in trouble or they use all the working capital reserves, all the restricted reserves, what will happen likely is the state will allow that MCO to tap into those solvency reserves, but then it's very likely, there's a very good possibility that that will be it. Will be a termination of the contract. And then what the way it can explain to us, the
other NCOs would have to come back and ante up and replenish that solvency reserve account. So that solvency reserve account is like you're on your last leg, basically. And that's a pool reserve that can be accessed by anybody, any NCO, should they really have some tough difficulties. Now, that was established that way because about 4 years ago, there was a partnership NCO that basically that is exactly what happened. We became insolvent, and then we put the Department of Health Services Office of Family Care Expansion in the surprise predicament because they had to find a way to have members. There were somewhere between 400 and 500 members that they had to find a relocation plan and put it in place and get them into another NCO or a combination. So there's a reason for that being established. So the ability to access all the work, you know, all the working capital dollars, we have that ability, but the only way would be through losses. As your surplus, and when you have more money, you have more revenues to cover your expenses. Should you have shortfalls, that's when we would start tapping into the reserve. And therefore, we would not have to go come back to the county and say we need some money. That is why it's set up, as Supervisor Mayo had pointed out.
Are there any questions of the committee? Supervisors in the audience? We have one speaker who would like to talk to item number 6, and that's, Supervisor Dimitrievitz.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Can you come to the table, Supervisor?
Thank you. No, just a quick question on the reserves. Oh, thank you. Okay. Alrighty. Good morning. My question was just on the reserves. I was listening in. I guess after yesterday's committee and today's committee, I still don't understand what is the ideal number for the reserve. Is it, like, who decides that? Is that the state? I know why, and I agree we need to have the reserves. My question is, we're now with this capitation increase, I believe we're depositing more into our reserves, correct?
There's an increase for 2011, mm-hmm. and then the preliminary rate for 2012 is a decrease.
Right.
So, and I guess if I would ask you, but in terms of who determines the appropriate amount, those minimums are set by the state. So the numbers that Ms. Harris provided in terms of what the minimums are for each of the three working, for each of the three reserves, those are minimums that are established by the state.
And then, just as a follow-up for a more concrete answer, Mr. Chairman, is where are we in what the state asked for and where we're at? Are we well over? I mean, I think that we've been doing so well that we've been depositing in there, and I wonder what is our final goal? Where do we need to be at?
Chairman, the $15.8 million was our reserves as of the end of August of this year. So we have been surplusing in about $2.6 million for the first 8 months of the year. So at the beginning of the year, we had $13.2 million, and as to your point, we would have added to that another $2.6 in additional reserves. If we continue to surplus, that number will go up. Well, start to decrease and start to fall below the 2.6 million. Let's say we end at 2 million, then that 15.8 will drop. So at right now we are at 15.8 million as of the end of August. What is our ideal number? We don't have an ideal number. It's formula driven for two of those reserves, the working capital and the restricted reserve. What I would like to point out to the board is this decrease. What we tried to do operationally was get Carousel back to break even. We received a rate decrease, and with the present pace of 2.6 million, we may end the year somewhere around $4 million. Well, my point is, the cut that we're taking, the decrease, is about $11.5 million in revenue. lost revenue. So we are trying to go back. We have already taken our surpluses, that pace that we're operating right now in 2011, and if that were to continue in 2012, that's already been wiped out. Mm-hmm. And then there's been another $7.5 million on top of that. So we're trying to balance the books here so we don't just completely wipe out more than half of our reserves. And that's the dilemma we're faced with now. As we shared, Director Ledger shared, our plan is to still go back. We feel we have some strong positions where an argument is to sit down with the state and try to renegotiate. I personally feel they cut too deep. This is the only MCO that, I mean, other MCOs received reductions. This is the only MCO that had received that deep of a cut. And I think the state has gone too far, and we have what we believe statistical evidence to show them otherwise, and maybe we will be successful at that. The problem is we don't want to have that happen. If should we become unsuccessful, and here it is December 15th, we don't want to get ourselves into a scramble. We are trying to work, we've tried to put a game plan prospectively so we don't have all of a sudden this domino effect occurring January 1st. Certainly, if we're successful, and I guess, you know, I'll turn to Director Ledger, but I believe if we're successful, some of these things will be reduced. Some of these things will be reduced.
Well, I have my answer, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I mean, they believe that we don't have a set number, but because of the constant state of change at the state, you're just trying to do the best that you can.
Sure.
And I respect that, and I think, once again, you know, we're put in a trying position with some of our most fragile people to just keep investing in the reserve because, quite frankly, we don't know what's going to happen. And that actually is my last question, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for allowing me to speak on this. And I'm sorry if I missed the discussion before. Do we have an estimate of how many people are now on the wait list? Do you all know?
Mr. Chair, the reservation. The wait lists are maintained by the Department of Aging, the Department of Health and Human Services, so I would defer to them for the most accurate number. When individuals come into the program is at the point where we assume responsibility for them. So those two wait lists are maintained by separate departments within Milwaukee County. So I can give you a guess, but the most accurate information is one row back. So
I guess that we're talking about finances, and you know, I guess I'd like to think optimistically that there will be a little bit more change. There will be a change of good because more people can be served on the wait list, which speaks to our financial reserve situation. Did you know that?
Yeah, I was just going to say for younger folks, between the ages of 18 and 60, we still have over 1,500 individuals on a wait list.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And we've gone from zero on July 1st to 500 people.
Wow.
And growing. It could just continue
and grow. Right, and that doesn't account for, I still believe there's a large amount of people, and I know Director Stein knows this, that think just because there's a cap that you don't have to sign up for the wait list.
Mm-hmm.
And that's disheartening. So thank you so much, Mr. Chairman.
Do you have something else you want to add?
Yes, just one other thing. I think maybe if this might be helpful, this we could submit it to the board, to CP, and the Ministry of Services. We keep track of our capitation rate from year to year to year, and actually have, like, it's a simple document, it's line graphed out, but what happens is the variability in our capitation rate is just going up, and it drops way down, and it goes up a bit, and it comes up. Just seeing that document alone speaks volumes of the uncertainty as to what our revenues are going to be from one year to the next, so, which is why we try to put together a game plan, and we'd be happy to just submit that to, you know, Steve and the board. It's just a one page, it's just a graph that would show that, because it's one year it was 13.3%, the next year it was less than 1%.
Okay.
So I don't know if you'd like that.
That would be helpful. If you could send that to all supervisors.
And yes. Mr. Chair, kind of board supervisors, just an additional comment. As Mr. Hassan said, you know, should we be successful in our efforts with the State Department of Health Services,
It's that will allow us the ability to look at reimbursement rates for providers and making sure that we're able to. Any MCO is only as good as its provider network, both from the care management side and every other service category. I truly believe that the efforts that we're making in all of these areas, really, we have never done anything that has not been first in the best interest of the members. So I guess, to sort of give you the best analogy, if we receive a favorable adjustment, that still doesn't make it okay for people to go an extraordinary amount of time on the bus or to have to do something that they don't choose to do. I still want to make sure that we're offering people options and flexibility and trying to make their days as meaningful as possible. What that adjustment will allow us to do is to look at making sure that we really are able to continue to be able to strike a balance where we're compensating agencies fairly and so that they're able to continue to provide quality services. And we can't, no one can cut agencies' revenues to the bone and expect them to do a good job in serving a very vulnerable population. It doesn't work like that.
So the toolkit from the state didn't make your financial future any better, and as well as it added to the waiting list and kind of put the burden back on the people who can least absorb the challenges. Is that a fair statement to make?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I believe it is.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments from supervisors? Okay, we have one speaker. Who would like to supervise the mayor? Okay, we do have one speaker, Ms. Barbara Becker. Please come forward, please. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairman Thomas and the members of the committee. My name is Barbara Becker with Disability Rights Wisconsin. Disability Rights Wisconsin is a protection and advocacy agency for people in our state, and along with that role, we serve as the ombudsman for the family care program. So that means that individuals, people with disabilities throughout the state who are in the program, when they have problems getting access to services, issues around quality of service, et cetera, they can contact us and get assistance at no charge. We often work collaboratively with the Milwaukee County Managed Care Organization, for example. We work very closely together around concerns about lifting the cap. However, I do have a very different perspective about the information that was shared with you today and want to share some concerns with you and speak on behalf of people whose lives are impacted by this. The proposal that you saw here today makes significant reductions in services, and I don't feel that there's a justification for those reductions given the financial status of the MCO. We just heard about the very significant reserves they have, and in a few minutes you're going to be asked to approve a proposal to transfer an additional $3,558,215. That means that the reserves are going to be close to $20 million. Maybe the reason that this MCO got such a decrease in their capitated rate is because their reserves are so extremely high as compared to the other MCOs. The funding that is received from Medicaid, the priority is supposed to be to provide services to help people be as integrated as possible into the community. Yes, there is a requirement to maintain the reserves, and I commend the commitment to fiscal responsibility there, but there has to be a balance in that. The decrease in the rate that you heard about, where we're seeing some very draconian cuts, I believe, in benefits for people, that rate is not yet in effect. It's proposed to go into effect in January. So we have extremely large reserves, the largest of any managed care organization, larger than they're required to be by the state. We're going to be putting another $3.5 million in there. We have a proposed rate that very well may not go into effect. In the past, when they've appealed these, they've been successful. So why are we already moving forward with such extreme changes to services? Just to give you a few examples of these, with one change, for example, is that day programs would be provided in every home where people already live. Well, that's not what this program and community integration are about. That means that individuals are living in an institution, a group home, and that the programming that they get, instead of going out into the community and being integrated, getting to meet with other people, people who, by the way, are friends and who they have relationships with, and going to a program, let's say Eisenhower Center, where they have expertise and facility with a lot of special services. Instead, they'll have the option of staying in their group home and being there 24/7. That's not quality of life. That's not integration. That's what these funds are supposed to provide, give people opportunities to get out into the community with the services they choose. And, you know, I think when we talk about the idea of consumer choice, we can say, well, people will be given the choice. You know, we'll tell them, you can now get the day program in your home, but if you don't want it, you can appeal that. Again, this is a vulnerable population, and the process for making appeals is a very complicated one. And a lot of people are scared to do it. They're scared to challenge the system in that way. I'm also concerned about some of the changes in transportation. Again, I know that we face some difficult issues if we're trying to balance what can we do fiscally versus what our limited resources are. But transportation is vital to keeping older adults and people with disabilities in this program independent and giving them a quality of life. Back in 1998, there was a lawsuit against Milwaukee County because at that time, we had very serious issues around quality and safety with transportation providers. As a result of that lawsuit, there was a move to just have two providers through MCTS who provide those rides and where there's a lot of quality assurance and oversight to ensure that people are safe. I have heard from providers in the community that since some of these changes have been in place where residential settings, for example, have been told, you're going to provide the transportation now. The people who live in your facility aren't going to be getting rides through Transit Plus anymore. I've been told that they've seen issues around quality and safety, and I've also been told that residents have fewer choices now. For example, people are told, okay, the van is going to the grocery store now. That's your opportunity for community integration instead of people having the opportunity to pick where they want to go and to schedule the time. You know, all, of course, is part of their family care plan. So I wanted to ask you as policymakers, I guess, for a couple of things. First of all, to please try to balance the fiscal concerns and the quality concerns. And I think this is a program that is fiscally sound. I think there's a very good chance that their appeal about the rate is going to be a successful one. So I think it's too early to be making these kind of extreme cuts to services. And I'd ask that that be reconsidered. I also know that we're going to be looking at an audit of transportation that came up before this committee for the CARE Transit Service. And let's be more comprehensive. Let's look at the transportation services that are provided in family care as well, because none of us want another tragedy. The reason that the lawsuit occurred before is because a young woman lost her life as a result of unsafe transportation practices because her wheelchair was not properly secured. So none of us want something like that to happen again. So we'll, you know, continue to work with the state on rolling back the caps. I had an opportunity to meet with Governor Walker earlier in the month, and I'll continue to do everything I possibly can to push for that. But the reserves are not a factor with the waiting list. I just wanted to make sure that there wasn't any confusion about that. The reserves are not impeding our ability. How much we do or don't have in the reserves, our ability to serve more people. You know, it's a separate policy issue. So thank you for the opportunity to share these concerns. And I welcome the chance for any of you to, if you have an interest in learning more, to talk with some of the people who are enrolled in this program who are coming to us because their lives are being negatively impacted by these cutbacks in service.
Supervisor Mayhew, followed by Roma West.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Becker, I know that you are truly an advocate for the elderly, for the disabled, but you know when it comes to that transportation, it was not Milwaukee County that made the change, the state of Wisconsin, especially with the paramedic program when they went to that broker.
That actually doesn't impact people in family care.
I know that you got some good stuff here, but come on now. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for letting me continue to speak. But Ms. Becker, you got to look at these things. Even though it's not the carve out, and we're trying to make sure that we are doing a proper program, that transportation, when we went outside, we're trying to bring down those venues so we can make sure that we have those people there. We have more venues, vendors who had less aggregated, antiquated vehicles. Now you have people who have the right China vehicles. Because we don't want that lawsuit anymore. And so when that transportation work, we try to make sure we get to that point A to point B. You're not upset about that 3-hour ride. We're cutting that down. Sometimes there's going to be some inconvenience for some people, but we are still there trying to serve the most vulnerable, make sure they still have the independence. The other part, I really don't know, but that transportation, I know that it affects a little bit with the state because they still use, some of them was trying to use Transit Plus, and they couldn't do it. And so there's a number of things going out there with that program. But once that broker came in the whole thing, and the state turned around and said, now you look at the venue. But when we talk about the reserves, do you know that the other family care program that subsidized by the state of Wisconsin, can you ask the state of Wisconsin to subsidize Milwaukee County a little bit too? So we want to have those big reserves. Because I know you have to talk to your friend, Mr. Walker, so we need you to get us the opportunity to get some money back here too. All right, Ms. Becker? And I want to thank you because you are a strong advocate. But you haven't used our favorite word lately, the safety net. Come on.
The safety net.
All right.
I'll try.
Okay. All right.
Supervisor Roma West, followed by Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just was going to kind of echo what Supervisor Mayo just said. He kind of hit it on the head. I think that when we expanded family care to the disabled in Milwaukee County, it was a gamble because we weren't really getting the capitated rate that we wanted. We weren't exactly sure if we were going to be able to serve everybody that we wanted to with that rate, and we went ahead and we moved forward anyway. And I don't have regrets for that, but I also, and I'd love to hear from Ms. Ledger in regards to Ms. Becker's testimony, but I think that I don't like cutting service to people either, clearly, on any level. But in this particular case, I think if we're throwing caution to the wind, then we should be cautious, and that we should, Ms. Ledger and Mr. Hodgson and Mr. Hodgson's, bookkeeping familiarity with family care outdates my tenure on this county board. And so I do believe that, what they're presenting is really honestly what they feel will be the best for Milwaukee County and for the people that we serve, so that we don't find ourselves in a situation again where we have the county executive wanting to give this program up because it has been, since the beginning, and Ms. Beckert knows that too, it has been somewhat of a gamble for Milwaukee County to be involved in family care, period, but then as the expansion happened again. So I don't normally do, but I would vote in the side of caution just so that we are able to maintain this program and to maintain it, because it does way more good with us having it than we would if we didn't have it. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Any further questions or comments? Supervisor Johnson, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Beckert, you indicated that some reductions in services are occurring during 2011,
right.
And those reduced services are enacted by doing what? Because a lot of what I see for a lot of the would-be changes I see for 2012, and you've indicated that there are some changes that have been enacted during 2011.
Well,
take this to 2000.
With the transportation, where there's been changes, where residential providers are now providing transportation,
yep,
instead of people using Transit Plus as they did in the past.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's the area where what I've heard from the community has been twofold, that people have good sort of safety concerns, and also that residents
and the safety.
It's a very institutional kind of a model that, okay, everyone in the group will now go to
the safety concerns arise because if the agencies have to provide transportation, the transportation is not well organized, well thought out. It seems, I'm asking, what are the concerns?
Well, Well, I think that what we would have to do is to do more assessment to see what is going on the ground, just as we're talking about doing an audit with paratransit. You have many more providers now offering transportation services that may not have experience or expertise. And what I've heard from some of the community sites where people with disabilities are being taken in vans is that they are seeing a change and that they are concerned that they feel that there are some people providing rides now that have unsafe practices. You know, I'm not out there at the front lines. You know, people come to us as individual clients. We're not a, you know, work site in the community that has hundreds of people coming in vans, so I don't have that opportunity to be on the front line seeing it for myself. But other providers who are in that position have expressed that concern to me. So that's why I'm suggesting that it needs more exploration.
Thank you very much.
Thank
you. Director Ledger, can you respond to what Ms. Beckert said? As far as the unsafe practices
Absolutely.
Recently discovered or observed.
Mr. Chair, Supervisor Johnson, I'm very interested in hearing any specifics in terms of provider names and locations and member names to the extent that we can really protect the health information of members. There hasn't been anything that has been brought to my attention that within any network there are going to be areas that are going to need attention and improvement, but I have no specific information. So at the moment that I have the name of a transportation or any other type of provider for that matter, and safety concerns, that's something that we respond to very aggressively. We have a quality surveyor who goes out and does site visits. We also have established quality measures within our system. We have a whole quality management team that focuses on this. We have a system for anyone, the public, care managers, other providers. So a day program could register a provider complaint about a transportation provider and vice versa. So there's a number of avenues, but if there are concerns, obviously this is something that we want to bring up immediately, but I don't have any information on it.
Okay.
So the second I get it, I can follow up on those and bring a report back to this committee.
Thank you, ma'am. I would say, Mr. Chairman, I would say to Ms. Beckert, make that information available to Director Ledger, because I've called her a number of times in the past, and instead of passing the information along to somebody else, she directly inquires. So if there are concerns, identified concerns, then she'll try to find out about those agencies, what's going on, so that maybe some resolution can occur. Particularly as it relates to the members, those at the places who are being transported, if there is a problem with respect to vendors feeling as if they have to make adjustments because now they've got a higher ridership than they had before, and they're not really paying attention to safety because they're trying to meet schedules. I would think that the first thing to do is to consult with Director Ledger. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Supervisor Roma West, and then we'll move on to the
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to clarify with Ms. Beckert. I didn't hear her say that there are currently safety concerns. I heard her reference the 1992 lawsuit that was brought on the county in regards to paratransit and an incident that occurred then. Is that correct?
No, current safety concerns have been raised with us, but often when people share things with us, they do that in confidence. So, I mean, I agree. I think that those people who are on the front line should share their concerns with the managed care organization. I encourage them to do that, and I'll make follow-up calls to encourage them to do that as well. But I can't violate the confidentiality of a provider or a client tells me something and they don't want their name shared.
Okay. And in addition, I think the practice that Ms. Beckert describes is the kind of pooling. You know, everybody's in the van, and now we're all going to such and such a place. I think that, unfortunately, due to the cost of, you know, rides, I think that that's something that is going to be a reality for us. And as we look at the audit, that is one of the things that Mr. Hare is going to look at in regards to scheduling. And I mentioned this during Health and Human Needs yesterday. We had a public hearing, the Department on Aging's Resource Center, and that was the number one complaint that we got was in regards to transportation and the fact that if I'm going to St. Francis Hospital and you want to go to church, then you could sit on the bus for 3 hours because I have to be picked up and dropped off, and your church doesn't start until, you know, 4 o'clock, and so therefore you have that time. I have to come and get you when I'm picking up him to go to somewhere else, but it's in the kind of no rhyme or reason kind of thing. It's being used as a taxi cab, only in this case, because there's a set fare. It doesn't really make a difference for me as the driver or me as the scheduler whether or not you sit on the van all day, because I'm looking at it as, well, you probably have nothing else to do. And so I don't support that either. There has to be a happy medium. There has to be somewhere where we can meet and say, you know, these people shouldn't be held hostage on a van just because they want to go to church. But at the same time, I do feel like at least some, but it should be voluntary, pooling of rides is going to have to go on in order for us to run an effective, efficient, you know, paratransit program in Milwaukee County. So thank you very much. And I also would like to hear if there are safety concerns, what those safety concerns are. But I know that, again, Mr. Harris' audit will cover that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Supervisor Johnson.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. You're the last speaker.
I think the problem is, the living problem is, if there are concerns, if things are happening now, that needs to be reported to Ms. Ledger so that something can be done about it. She can speak for herself, but I think we have concerns about people being safe as opposed to anything else going on. So with respect to confidentiality, I don't think she needs names. She just needs to know what's going on, when it's happening, where it's happening, who's the agency. I mean, I think she needs to know that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Becker. Thank you, Mr. Lee. Madam Clerk, item number